Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Alvin. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Alvin.
Welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today. It's going to be a wonderful day. I can feel this. And so we've got Ruchir Shadeh with us. And Ruchir, thank you for joining us. And please just start right in and give us our first question.
Well, let's start with 2012, since we have done a few videos and podcasts on YouTube and iTunes, and the information you conveyed made some waves, which is nice, of course, but when we did the kind of follow-up clip where you, or should I say video, where you just something you wouldn't normally do, but just wanted to convey some information on this idea of preparedness for earth changes, especially because some people had interpreted what you said about 2012 and there being no global cataclysms, that somehow that meant that there would be no earth changes, which is an incorrect assumption. So you gave some information on preparedness, but for many students certainly that caused some confusion, because how do we have this on the one hand when on the other hand you say that now that growth comes through support, we really need not concern us with this anymore.
All right. Well, let's break it down into three sections. First of all, my brothers and sisters, there are those in your environment that might not live at the same level of mastery that you do. So, for an example, let's say that you're a single mom, you've got a couple of teenage boys. One boy is very much into living a life of impeccability. The other boy may not be. If you are in the place of the silent of the mind, you are in a place of sovereignty. Loss of sovereignty has been the core grief of humanity, and we discuss that in the book Journey to the Heart of God. But this loss of sovereignty can be repaired, if you will, when the surface mind no longer controls our life. The sovereignty of our being comes from effortless knowingness. It comes from deep connection with Source. And so the place where you are creating truth, instead of sitting and waiting for something to happen in your environment, is the place of mastery. You might be in that place of mastery. Your one teenage son may not. So even though you keep the major cataclysms in your area at bay, there might yet be more minor ones. For example, we live in Oregon, and every few years, around about December, January, we get hit with those specific storms that come in with a vengeance, and they're magnificent, and everybody huddles in their homes, and it makes a wonderful feeling of family unity when there is this inclement weather outside. However, there are times when the winds go to 100 and 150 miles an hour. And when that happens, trees fall across the road, depending on how long that lasts, and trucks can't get in with supplies. For many years, the stores locally had no power because they'd fall on power lines. Now some of the larger stores have generators. But you could easily run out of things in those stores, such as candles, flashlights, batteries, matches, basics. You know, if for some reason the water supply is cut off, the shelves with the bottled water are going to empty very rapidly. So it is always wise to have something ahead for those in your environment that may live differently. And you may be out of town, keeping another area safe. Meantime, back home, there might be flooding. So my recommendation is that there is, at the very least, just a short-term 14-day preparation done, which is not that complex to do. And so I was attempting to give people at least a hint of what it is that would assist them to be ready for such an eventuality. The old paradigm has been a very useful paradigm. It is to prepare for the worst in order to expect the best. That is a good way to live until you are in the silence of the mind. At that point, you take responsibility for everything in your environment. You simply know that it cannot flood if you deal properly with your emotional flow. If your emotions express, if they are expressing in the perfection of the divine being's emotions, not emotions like anger and so on. But the point is that when they express properly, it won't flood where you are. A master controls their environment. But for people that are not yet in that place where they are creating truth moment by moment because they live totally in the moment, in the silence of the mind, which is God consciousness or ascension or beyond, they live according to a law that says prepare for the worst so you can then have the joyous expectation of the best. And that is the philosophy that I was functioning according to when I gave people a thumbnail sketch of the basics. And the basics are all they need. The basics to keep them from, from being in need if there were a 14-day cut off of supplies or even longer.
All right, and I just want to make sure that this is the video called Earth Change Preparedness on our YouTube channel. I did want to just semantically just get something clear because you said previously that someone's presence in a certain area would kind of ward off cataclysms, but I thought just to make sure we'd kind of had established that the cataclysmic kind of change wasn't really going to occur.
Global cataclysms are not going to occur. The reason is that global cataclysms will, in fact, and we've got quite a few really good bits on this on the video so that we have on YouTube and iTunes, but the point is that the cataclysms that are global will drain energy by taking humanity by surprise, by putting them into shock. To be in shock drains energy. To drain energy lowers consciousness. When you find a localized area with even 100,000 people that perish in that area, instead of producing global shock, it produces global compassion. And the earth has little areas that it simply will clean up still, unless that reality changes today. Because today's truth is not tomorrow's truth. And if enough light workers work on their own issues, work on themselves, take time to learn the lessons of each day, the planet could catapult upwards in an ascension that pushes us beyond that as a possibility. At this moment, it is a possibility that there could be localized events that sweep with waves of compassion around the planet, and assistance comes in across racial and national boundaries. It creates unity instead of shock.
Okay, but that this creation, so are you saying that this creation of unity and the evoking of compassion is the actual purpose of this localized catastrophe?
No, it would be many more purposes than that. Because a purpose like that can be produced, like, say, the time Princess Diana died. Something like that is sufficient. It doesn't need to cover parts of China with 110,000 people, homeless or dead or whatever. No. If that happens, it is either getting rid of, for example, an area that doesn't belong on the map. There are such areas. New Orleans catastrophe. The way New Orleans is today is the way it should have been. It has arisen differently. The way it was obsolete. It was lagging behind the changes that took place on the planet. So where a place lags behind, it will be wiped off and rebuilt. That's one example. Mother could create a catastrophe in such an area, in a country, at the very time that they might be looking at incentives to invade another country. And if she does that, it could turn the focus somewhere else and give time for the paradigm to change, and those leaders might not even remember what it was they were aiming towards. So it could be multiple things. It could be that there's a group of people there that we discussed previously on our previous show, you know, that some of these people are obsolete. It could be that there's a high concentration of them in a specific area. It could be that the land is retaining ancient memories that need to be let go of. Any of those things could be the case. Or the entire area could be resisting change and causing a chaotic frequency on the planet. Multiple things like that could be factors.
Okay, that's very interesting.
You know that karma is a factor? No. Because Mother has erased karma when she erased linear time.
Okay, and I did actually must say I liked that the way, because we did a follow-up video to this Earth Change Preparedness on YouTube. It's not actually up at this time of recording, but will be by the time this is broadcast. And I must say I liked the way in which you started really turned it into the joys of abundance and having sort of a full shelf in your garage, that kind of thing. So maybe you...
Oh, shall we share that with them?
Yes.
Thank you. That's my favorite topic. I love it. My brothers and sisters, I'll give you a little insight into my nature here for a moment. I love abundance. There's nothing in my nature that's about scarcity. You know, if I can peaches, I'm going to can them till the cows come home. If I start to do something, I'm going to do it in abundance. The thing is that everywhere you look at the infinite's handiwork, there are millions of seeds on a huge, big oak tree. There's, you know, trillions of grains of sand on the ocean beaches. There are trillions of stars in the sky, millions of field flowers everywhere. Nothing is done just one off. It is always in great abundance. So I love abundance. So I use the food that I put away. But I've put up some old bookcases that were left behind and somebody left in my garage, and I put them up. And I, with the greatest joy, I buy things by the case when they're on sale. That gives me discounts. And so they're cheaper. And if prices are rising, which they may, that's even cheaper yet, because I bought them and it's enough for a few months. And a few months, I won't normally buy things for more than 2-3 months, because most things don't retain their food value for long. But we spoke about that on the clip. So anyway, I love the abundance of walking into my garage storage space and seeing all the wonderful cans on the shelf, and I've got all these options when I want to make dinner. The abundance of it brings me great joy. So my focus as I put my food in storage is not, oh my goodness, there could be a scarcity. It's, oh, how wonderful, look at the abundance. So thank you. That was a very good one. And on that note, let's take a quick commercial break.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Velvetspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We have some great questions lined up for you for today, so thank you for joining us again. Andrew here, what would be the next question?
I wanted to extend this topic of 2012 a little bit, and certainly in terms of this idea of prophecy. Now, I'm getting the impression that I'm not exactly sure how we would distinguish prophecy and prediction, but that it's now much more difficult to predict something about the future than, say, like 5 years ago or something. Is that correct, and why would that be?
That is correct, yes. And you're saying why, right?
Well, yeah, we've got you somewhere saying that trying to predict the future is like putting an exploding star in a box, something like that. But, I mean, why would it be so difficult now? What has changed?
There's two things that have changed. Progression used to be linear. So if you do A today, it is logical that B and C and D and E follow down the road. Now, one can change that somewhat, but there was a logical conclusion to the choices you made today. That is because we progressed linearly. And we have discussed this before on some of our previous recordings for this radio station. And that the fact is that we used to progress in three distinct stages. Transformation, which is the shedding of the old, then transmutation, which is the turning of what's left into higher order. For example, shedding the old could mean that a pet died. Okay, then you could realize after the death of the pet that, listen, I was giving most of my love to this little animal and very little to some of the primary relationships in my life because they're less safe than to love my little dog. But, you know, learning to love safely, because we love without expectations, is part of the destiny of man. And so you're going to change that. So what you did is you transmuted the pain into insight, stage two. Stage three of our linear progression was transfiguration. And that is when you change enough of your lead in your life to gold. The body can only hold so much gold. Life can only hold so much perception before it has to change the pattern around you and shift into a whole new, different pattern that's of a higher order, and that's transfiguration. They used to come one after the other. So an action today could predictably be foreseen to lead to an action or a reaction down the road. Those stages of linear progression now actually happen simultaneously. So insights are more exponential. They are instant. Growth is exponential. It is instant. You can in one moment be in identity consciousness and shoot through stages into an advanced stage. I've seen that happen in my classes with new students, that they shoot into their mastery and they walked through the door still identifying with their surface mind with an internal dialogue because of events around us that happen. So when life changes like that exploding star, it cannot be predicted. So that's number one. Progression is no longer linear. Number two, time does not travel linearly. Time used to travel like the road and the highway. If you stand in the middle of it, there's that highway behind you, and there's that highway in front of you. Now, it's in fact like sliced bread. If you take a loaf of sliced bread and you put it on its end, standing vertically, this is a bit how time is right now when there's only the eternal now. Every moment exists within this moment. You can pull out this slice of bread, you can pull out that slice of bread, which means you can change past moments, future moments, everything. This moment is not the only moment. Mother has changed the way things are written in the book of life that dictates how the laws of existence takes place. Instead of saying, from this point on, such and such will occur, she changes it in this instant, and it changes back all the way to the first instant of which life was created. So, take a look at what this does, because this is a huge consequence. See, if we only change from this moment forward, growth is kind of slow. Because we learned all the hard knocks, we went through all the pain and suffering, and now we've arrived at this point, and okay, now the future can be lived with greater wisdom. But just imagine if the wisdom you have now can be carried back to the very beginning of your life. Think how much you would build on it with all those past moments. Because the wisdom you have now, you arrived at through those painful past moments, they don't need to be there. If you can take now's wisdom back to the beginning, you will continually change moment by moment, because now every moment is building every other moment. That's how experiential growth happens. And that's why, because we're changing the past, every moment in the past, every moment we live, it is virtually impossible to predict the future. All you can say is this moment, such and such, is the most likely future.
And how would you sum up this principle, like if you, to explain how this works now?
The 2012 principle?
Well, no, I'm saying how would you sort of sum it up to say that every change we now do goes back to the beginning?
Well, if one looks at your own life, if what you knew today could be there, for instance, when you went to high school, you would live high school differently. So you would gain far greater information. In other words, when that happens in the past, the present moment changes. But as the present moment changes, because it changes all the life experiences in between. Let's say at prom date you made a huge big fool of yourself, it damaged you, okay, finally you work it through, you're maybe 60, 70 years old, who knows. You work it through at 60, 70, you take that information back to the prom night. And now you don't live your life in a way that shrinks because of some event that happened. You live it majestically, because you can see the absolute wisdom and that experience is no longer needed. So now you call in a different set of higher circumstances between prom night and your 60th birthday, say. So life changes. Every decision becomes different. It changes you this moment. So now all the moments in between prom night and 60 are higher, changing this 60th birthday moment. Now that goes back to the beginning. So now all the moments in between are contributing also to the beginning prom night. You can see growth, it's out of control. It's, growth is like an exploding star.
Well, see, that's what I meant, because I think it's a good thing that you actually sort of just really fleshed it out to explain what it is, but I was really just asking how to sum up all that in an idea, but maybe growth as an exploding star is the,
yes,
the best
catchphrase. It's the best I can do.
Well, and it's a good one, because I think, especially in the previous show, we were discussing this phenomena of why people often flock to fear peddlers, and of course in conjunction with 2012, that's a major issue. I mean, I think we've got, in a few years, at least 2 years or something, we've got this major 2012 movie coming up, and I think we can only, well, let's not be too cynical, but only wonder what kind of angle they're going to take in there. I'm sure it's not pretty, but it's, I think certainly in relation to 2012, to point out that we really cannot say anything about the future very well.
My brothers and sisters of light out there, watch my words. I'm going to give you a prophecy. If 2012 comes and goes the way we think it is on the calendar, and understand that we pass 2012 towards the end of 2005, as the ascension moved us into higher levels, time was different. Our calendar is completely incorrect. Multiple of the prophecies I myself had given became completely obsolete. I saw Mother day by day by day prevent them in some way. And so we already passed it. But let's say on our incorrect calendar, we get to 2012, and people that have made their claim to fame because they ride on the coattails of these trends. If teachers out there ride on the coattails of the Indigo Children, or they ride on the coattails of 2012, or, you know, this ruin that's been discovered or something. The point, or some mathematical formula has been discovered. You know, when you ride on the coattails of a concept and then it proves to hold no water, many of these prophets of doom are going to claim how they were able to prevent it. Like, oh, they worked with aliens from the 12th dimension and were able to repair something like a hole in space. Okay. There's only one that can take credit for preventing these things from happening. And it's the Infinite Mother. And after August of 2007, when we actually encountered the living God, which is the Father, he assisted as well. But they're the only ones that can take credit for preventing it. There have been multiple holes in space that have been mended. There have been days when Mother consolidated and combined timelines. Then she combined cosmic timelines. Because what they were is coming out in a book called Windows into Eternity. We're just doing the final editing on it. Please watch for it. But the reality of the cosmos and how the end of duality came, there were massive roadways out there, if you will, with cosmoses strung like pearls on a string. And cosmic clusters is actually what they were. Mother combined them by pulling her DNA strands into one channel. This is one tiny layer of layer upon layer. There is approximately 4, 5, 6 hours worth of daily work that I have to do with Mother, because she requires that words be put in the book that she puts in physicality. So for somebody to say, oh, I prevented it because with these aliens from Mars or whatever, I healed this hole in space, is as simplistic as to say a child says, Mommy, I planted a flower, now spring will come. There are so many layers involved that have prevented it. And every layer that is done, as you can see from our previous conversation here, changes everything all the way back. As it changes backwards, it's changing it forwards as well. So there are vast, vast changes that in life going on around us that must manifest in physicality, and all of them positive.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I did at least come across an example of that already. the other day, and it of this, you know, so and so with the ninth dimensional blah blah, we repaired this, and it really made me think, like, well, besides thinking, oh, that's rich, I also thought, well, it's interesting because even though, of course, not everyone is peddling this 2012 fear thing, I do think that the videos that we made are really kind of amongst the first where it's really clearly being said that we need not expect this kind of global doomsday thing. And I was wondering if there's maybe some kind of bandwagon being created for that. But,
You know, I want to address this issue of other teachers because I absolutely do not want to give the impression that I am in any way knocking teachers. I don't mean to downgrade their teachings. I am addressing the teachings, not the teachers. And there are very definitely a need for teachers at all levels. So I just want to make that quite clear. My brothers and sisters, there are definitely a few light workers, the major light workers on Earth, that were given some tasks by Mother to do in one way or another. And they have been doing beautiful work. The major, major contribution that light workers have made, however, to this ascension of the planet and the eliminating of these, you know, things that go bump in the night that used to be so scary to humanity, is in fact through our inner overcomings. It's the biggest contribution we can make. We have the habit of seeing our value in what we do. It isn't. It's in who we are. So I just want to say that, and when we come back, what I would like to tackle is I'd like to speak about the different roles that teachers play and how valuable it is, and that a teacher at the top should not in any way not see the value of teachers that teach, say, the base of the pyramid where the majority of people are, nor vice versa. So let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
In coming back here into our third segment of our show, I wanted to discuss the role that teachers play. My beloved light family, when I speak of those who peddle fear, understand that I am very specifically speaking about those who capitalize deliberately, financially and in other ways, on making people afraid. Because they sell products that will save you, or they have all the answers, nobody else does, so please keep coming. This is different than a teacher that teaches from the heart, the highest knowledge they have, and they may think that 2012 is coming, and they are trying very hard to get people to have the right attitude about it. Their intent is to uplift. The other's intent is to exploit. So first of all, I want to make that distinction. Secondly, the majority of light workers, now if we speak about the light worker pyramid of illumination, the majority of the light workers are at the base of the pyramid. And teachers there have a very real and valuable role that they play. They teach about the known, because the known is light that has been accessed. Instead of telling you, be afraid and use this external technology, a valid teacher for the base of the pyramid will tell you, sources within. You know, don't be afraid. You will know where to be at the right moment, even if they think there's going to be a major catastrophe. They will teach you things like life is eternal. That is absolutely true. All of these things are the known. Known is light. The majority of the masters that we've had on earth, that we have revered as our great teachers in the past, when we were way, way, way back down lower into consciousness, these major teachers came forward amongst mankind. They taught the known, because they taught the masses. They taught the base of the pyramid. We also are very used to identifying holiness or mastery with teachers that teach the known. They are normally in deep bliss. They are in silence. They appear holy. These are able to be identified as the kind of thing that people that are in the base, that are trying to overcome the harried lives of that they had lived up until that point, would like to emulate. However, if you stay in the bottom of the pyramid, you are staying in the fishbowl. Because the bottom of the pyramid can only take you so far. Everything that is known in the cosmos is not known to man. But what is known to man is his known. What's already known, you can go round and round the walls of the fishbowl. And eventually you're going to want to get out of that fishbowl. It doesn't mean those teachers don't have value. They do. They are refining the base of the pyramid. But at some point, there's a divine discontent that propels the student or the truth seeker to the next level. And in the next level, we deal with what is man's unknown. That which might be known to the angels or the fairies or whomever all over the cosmos, but isn't normally accessed by ordinary human perception. And so they might then go to a shaman, a mystic, a seer, beings that can do miracles, perhaps, but the point is they're working with the unknown. They are the middle of the pyramid. This might still be a place where your teachers are, in fact, having their own internal dialogue. That means they are still identifying with mind, with emotion, with their body as them. And so they may still be in ego, or they may not. Here you're starting to get some of the teachers that have left ego identity and some of the seers in the Toltec ways, a prime example of this, where they leave ego identity. They are teaching you about the unknown, and they are themselves no longer in ego, or some of the shamans or so, some may yet be there, some may not. So you get a mixed bag in the middle as to your teacher, whether they are already out of the dialogue of the mind into the silence or not. If they are, incidentally, in the silence of the mind, they will be able to provide on their own steam the miracles as as we call it, which is simply the access to the hidden realms, the unseen realms. If they are still in ego identification, they won't have that ability. They will use allies. They'll use spirits that they work with, that they have contracts with, or they'll use a dragon that they're working with, or somebody that they're working with in the hidden realms will, in fact, provide the materializing of objects or whatever it is. You know, they might have accomplished some skills themselves, such as levitation, disappearing. Those things are not that hard. They become easier when there's silence of the mind. But that's the middle of the pyramid. At some point, the student is going to, a few of them, are going to say, I want to stand on the master's shoulders, and I want to fly. Plus, I want to do something that no one has ever done before. I want to evolve life in my own special way that affects every being in the cosmos, not just my own growth. Well, my brothers and sisters, how is that done? That is done by bringing in the unknowable. The unknowable is not known to man, but it's also not known to every other being in the cosmos. And it is even something that the infinite mother and father in the cosmos themselves have not yet accessed. They might know. See, mother knows all that is. She has all the answers. But as man, we have the most unique opportunity, and that is to produce the questions. So they might want a teacher that deals with the unknowable. And that is the capstone. And even in that capstone, my brothers and sisters, there are levels. So in that way, the truth seeker makes themselves up through the pyramid. And as we pointed out on the video that we did for, is it YouTube, Rogier, that's going on?
What, the Roll of the Way show is?
Yes.
Yes.
So it will be on YouTube. As we pointed out there, do not get hung up in personalities of your teacher. Because somebody is a beautiful, divine being that is totally in bliss all of the time, don't assume that that's the end of the road. I will tell you that the masters at the very top capstone are far harder to identify. Because in the middle, there are miracles to be seen. In the capstone, they teach you to do the miracles. And they stand back and they let you do them. So there's a whole different ball game afoot. And they live life vibrantly, fully. They play with life. They play with clothes. They play with food. They play with life because it has become their playground. So it's not the placid bliss states that we are used to assuming masters have. So they're harder to spot. But do not become attached and think that one teacher is going to be the only one you will ever have. Now, just before we take our break, and I've been on a run here, so it's giving you time to get a good question together for us, but just before we go on our break, there was something, though, that I want to point out. In this upwardly mobile journey through the pyramid of perception or illumination, light workers are going to come to a point, and it's usually in the capstone, where their minds become silenced. And at that point, something happens that could be viewed by some as exclusivity, because I say, listen, hold on lightly to your companions on this journey. But a part happens there that is an interesting phenomenon, and it's not exclusivity, because at the time of the silencing of the mind, the master is in the utmost inclusivity. But what happens is that it's no longer comfortable to be around the average person whose mind clatters like a bunch of empty cans somebody hung on the bumper of newlyweds. they make such a noise, and they can hear them because they're in the silence. And so it isn't comfortable to be around other people to the same extent. So they seek out other masters where there is the silence of the mind, because there they truly feel at home. Let's take a commercial break, and when we come back, Ruchir will give us our next question.
Almien continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almien is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almien, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to our final section of today's show. We've had some interesting dialogue going, and thank you, Ruchir, for steering us in these directions. I think they're very valid questions for today. And what else would you like to talk about?
Well, I mean, since you were kind of on your roll there, I didn't.
I was on a roll, wasn't I?
There's a lot of questions and points I've actually wanted to just mention here, because let's see, first of all, I was wondering, does that imply what you said about the spiritual pyramid? I mean, I'm assuming that this talk of levels doesn't exactly imply some kind of hierarchy, or does it?
It does imply a hierarchy of perception. It does not imply a hierarchy of importance, and I so appreciate that you bring this point up, because the perception is the way it would be as you're trying to see your village from the mountain, and it looks one way when you're down below, but as you climb up the mountain, you can see more and more and more of the town in which you live. That is what I mean by the hierarchy of perception. Hierarchy of importance. How can, you know, the legs say to the head, you're more important than I, or vice versa? And that brings me to a point which I'm very pleased that you've brought up, because how foolish is it for a teacher at the base of the pyramid to look at somebody at the capstone who doesn't look all that masterful to begin with, because they're living life fully. Okay, they're vibrant, and they're not the usual sort of role model. So at that top of the pyramid, there is a beat from a drum that master can hear, that the master at the base of the pyramid cannot even begin to hear. And, you know, as Rumi, the very wonderful Sufi philosopher, said, if you cannot hear the music, you think the dancer is mad. So it's a big mistake to criticize somebody just because their paradigm is so way out there that you can't even fathom it. Same vice versa. For the capstone to say, this base of the pyramid is completely incorrect perception, there's no room for this, there would be no pyramid, and there would be no proper growing up in spirituality without that base and the middle of the pyramid. Each part is vitally important.
But would you say then that there is some sort of natural upward progression in there, or will some people simply prefer to
stay?
That's
the goal.
That's
the
ideal.
Yeah. But of course, you know, people get stuck. They become a devotee of so-and-so, and oh, they couldn't dream of leaving. And so they always stay a devotee. Somebody becomes a teacher of such and such school. They want to be faithful to the school. Well, then they always stay a student. And in the middle of the pyramid, thank you for steering me into this one. In the middle of the pyramid, the area where people get stuck on is they appraise the teacher by what they do. They appraise the teacher by all the miracles that they can do. If they can do a lot of miracles, they are very enlightened. It doesn't equate. And we can get very much addicted to the thrill of someone doing these tricks for us, because they're just tricks. When something from the hidden realms does something into the physical, what's miraculous about that? Nothing. It's just another reality peeking through into ours. There's so many realities beyond that. You see, one that keeps going is, I see where you're leading me. One that keeps going is a perception seeker. That's where you wanted me to go, right?
Amongst others.
Okay. Well, the perception seekers keep going, my brothers and sisters. The power seekers, they get stuck in the middle of the pyramid. And in the base of the pyramid, where one gets stuck is when you see another as greater than yourself, and so you always stay the student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now there's two things. I'm just wondering what would be the best angle from which to approach it, because there's two things I'm wondering about. First of all, why it would be that, what the motivations would be of everyone that is, like the people that have ultimately sort of gotten into the top of the pyramid, why then? I mean, I know you kind of just shrug your shoulders and ignore it, but personally I do wonder why they would sort of resort to, well, middle or even base pyramid stuff as if it's the same kind of thing and it's all good and whatever, you know, why they would actually even sort of still be interested in teachers who they themselves have technically grown beyond.
Are you saying the students, or are you saying teachers that teach lower
Well, in this case, I'm referring to a certain phenomena that sometimes rears its head amongst the masters in your pods or your students.
Because some of them cannot stand the heat. You have to be a being of the utmost fluidity. Some of the masters go into their mastery, but if you are at that epicenter, at that top of the pyramid upon which the whole cosmos pivots, you find something that has never been found before. The entire cosmos has now grown, and so the entire pattern around you changes. So you are literally the epicenter. The epicenter's fluid, you need such fluidity to cope with it, because I have often thought, who can live with me? Because day by day by day, I am not the same. That which I was yesterday is entirely different that which I am today. Because of the vision changes that I've had, I have seen so much since yesterday. So my pattern of life is constantly changing around me. And where there is resistance to life, those that make it into that level will find it more comfortable to go back down to lower levels. It's comfortable. There's less required of one. It takes courage to be the capstone. That's why, you know, it's a point. It's not a base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember, which is really my second point, that last year when myself and our good friend from the Netherlands, Femke, were preparing for the Dublin workshop, and we were, you know, the Ring of Truth was your latest book that had come out, or actually Aruba Farina was coming out then, and we were, you know, both kind of sort of like excited, but somehow a bit sort of like, you know, this quote unquote far out stuff that's in your books about fairies and this and that, but you know, I knew that the sort of the stuff which is much more, I wouldn't say stuff, standard, but topics such as forgiveness and emotions and relationships, that what you said on that was, you know, obviously very, you know, high caliber. So I assumed that the rest must be good as well. But, you know, in the same vein, I've been thinking, well, you know, how do we, been contemplating this idea of formatting some of your material in a way in which it would be digestible for the mainstream and for Oprah. But the more I've been thinking about it, you know, like, much like in the way in which you had a musician in the 80s who really did much more marginal stuff but made a rock album just to show, you know, the people that he could create for the mainstream, and he had a massive hit with the album. But, you know, when I think about that in context of you, it just seems that if you would create something which was very easily digestible for the mainstream, that it might actually have some kind of backlash, because if people then assume, you know, we don't want you getting stuck in some kind of codependency triangle, so to speak, with the public at large. Would you agree?
Well, I have just time for one sentence. So what I want to say is this. That which is easily digestible does not push boundaries. And to push the boundaries, you have to have no belief systems. Something that's easily digestible usually fits around existing belief systems. So you have to be totally comfortable with not knowing. And secondly, the capstone teachers do not gather students. They help to create masters. And as such, it requires those with the courage to change their lives to be there with them. The masses are not for them. It simply is not who they teach. So, my brothers and sisters, I'm very grateful for these questions. It's given us a lot of ability to solve things that we couldn't do before, and we hope you will join us again next time. Thank you for being with us.
A Life in Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as a microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.